He has been the music director of the Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra, a San Francisco-based early music ensemble, for nearly 30 years, and his discography includes over 100 recordings, both as conductor and instrumental soloist. Tonight, he's in the role of guest conductor of the Illinois Chamber Orchestra in a program of music by Haydn, Bach, Scarlatti, and Telemann. I spoke recently with conductor Nicholas McGeegan about his career, and we began with a question about the differences between conducting modern and period instrument ensembles.
There is some difference. Obviously, a period instrument orchestra spends its time playing music from the Baroque period, and so those particular musicians want very little put in the parts. They like to be able to improvise, they like to little bit of a dare to play the music pretty much as it was appeared on the page in the 18th century. On the other hand, when you're playing with a modern group, they have to play music of all sorts of periods, from Corelli or something like that, up to the stuff where the ink isn't dry. And so it's a much greater stylistic thing. So I find it's very helpful. I hope it's helpful, to write in an awful lot of what I want. There's a thing called double dotting, which is a thing where you sort of jazz up the rhythm, and it's not always clear where to do it. So I write it in. And then, because it's nice in the rehearsal to be making music, not kind of doing stuff that I could perfectly well have organized beforehand. Mm-hmm. It's also someone like Bach puts in very few dynamics. So I put them in. We can always change our mind in the rehearsal, do something different, but at least it's a basis on which to start.
Is there any difference in your approach to playing early music, as this program is going to consist of, on modern instruments?
Well, the pitch is different. Mm-hmm. Early instruments play at a lower pitch. So that's an obvious difference. If you were to play them side by side, mm-hmm. they'd come out a half step apart, which... not very attractive.
You play at 4:15.
We would play at 4:15, or classical music, Mozart at 4:30, which is directly in the crack between the half step, and then we've actually, with my orchestra, done period instrument Brahms, which is at 4:40. But I'm not the most dogmatic, authentic guy.
You don't. Nobody ever comes out of a concert and says, "Oh, I was really impressed by the authenticity of it."
Oh, I hope so. I want the people. I hope not. I mean, I hope people will say, "Gosh, that was really moving," or "I really enjoyed that," rather than, "Boy, that was correct."
Yes, exactly.
I think one of the answers would be, for example, you know, if you're going to see, let's say, Hamlet, you want to be moved by it. You don't want someone to come out beforehand and said, "Tonight we're going to get all the words in the right order." It's actually not what it's about. Mm-hmm. We're still, as musicians, entertaining a modern audience. Tomorrow night's audience, Saturday night's audience. The two concerts will be different, I hope, because they're in different buildings. Mm-hmm. We'll play slightly differently. They may have one may be very resonant, one may be very dry. That will affect the tempos. Mm-hmm. In just the same way as if you were going to speak in one of those buildings, you'd speak differently if the sound was different.
Play to the acoustic of the room.
Absolutely. Also, an audience can affect you. A very sparkly, fun audience will produce perhaps a glitzier concert. An audience which has come there to show how loudly it will cough will probably make the musicians rather grumpy.
Tell us about your background. Did you set out to have a career in early music?
No, I'm the son of two artists. So,
Visual artists.
My father was an architect as well. So I did the one thing they couldn't do, which was music. So if I wanted to draw a circle, one of them would just come around and do it freehand and showed me how to, and just correct. So I thought, to hell with that, I'm going to do music, which I did. And I started on the piano when I was about 6. And then I wasn't big enough to play the flute till I was 8. And then I went to Cambridge University. And when I was a teenager, I wanted to be a composer. I didn't conduct. Teenage conductors should be kept well away from orchestras. But I played in orchestras, which was great fun. And then when I went to Cambridge, there was one of the subjects you have to do is the acoustics of musical instruments and concert halls, why they sound like they do. And I wasn't very good at it, actually, because it involved math, and I'm not very good at that. But I had a fantastic teacher who also had a collection of 18th century wind instruments, and he lent me an 18th century flute, which which I still have, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I learned to play that a little bit just for fun. And he had a tenant who lived on the top floor of his house who was called Christopher Hogwood.
Oh, my goodness.
And so Chris, being a brilliant harpsichordist that he is, heard this awful huffing and puffing from this Baroque flute and said, you know, basically, when it sort of stops sounding like you're blowing across the top of a beer bottle, why don't we play some sonatas? So we did. And that was... We gave some concerts, and then he was forming a period instrument orchestra, and I played in the very first recording, which was in about 1973.
Those were landmark recordings. We have them in the music library here.
LPs and tape, mm-hmm. which was then sliced to make the edits. Mm-hmm. Great fun. And then I was first flute for Roger Norrington and Sir John Elliott Gardner in the 70s. So that was my sort of early music training. And then I was invited to this neck of the woods to be a professor at Washington University in St. Louis for a year, or for 3 months, first of all, semester, and that morphed into 5 years. So I'm slowly going west. I now live in California.
Right.
It's Hawaii next. Watch out.
Tell us about the pieces that you're going to perform in the concert.
Well, we've got known and unknown pieces, I think you could say. The most obviously well-known piece is Brandenburg III. The Brandenburgs, of course, are the gold standard of Baroque music. It just doesn't get any better than that. Number three is great because it's for nine solo string players plus continuo, that's the bass and me. And it's a glorious piece to play. And it's great for a chamber orchestra situation. Also, it's gives me a little chance because there's no slow movement. And so you have to make one up. So I will probably do that.
It's just a few chords.
It's just a few chords, and you're supposed to make up a movement in between. So mm-hmm. I'll see if the spirit moves me, and I'll
make you will improvise.
I will improvise something, I expect, yeah. Because improvisation is part of the deal.
Part of the style, yeah.
Yeah.
Or the practice.
The practice. We then have a Haydn symphony, number 44, which is called the Trauer. That doesn't mean that it's all glum and gloomy. It's part of this style called Sturm und Drang, which means sort of storm and stress. So it's a little bit like, it's the sort of music that in the 18th century, if they'd had silent movies, this would have been the bit where Fay Wray was tied to the tracks. The train was coming along, but we don't have the Keystone Cops.
Right, right.
So it's high drama, as opposed to the sort of super elegant Earl Grey kind of mm-hmm. elegant 18th century music. This is very earnest mm-hmm. and as I say, stressed.
Also on the program, Scarlatti. Is this Alessandro?
This is actually Domenico.
Oh, Domenico. He's primarily known as a keyboard composer.
Well, he is, and these are keyboard sonatas arranged by an organist in England called Charles Averson. And what happened is that keyboard pieces, keyboard music, was in the 18th century, at least in England and often in other countries too, almost entirely women's music. Men did not play. They were allowed to play the organ in church, but they did not play the harpsichord. So if you produced, as Scarlatti did, a set of keyboard sonatas which were published in England, they would be played by the daughters of the gentry, but were not played in public. If you wanted to get music better known, you arranged it for string orchestra, and then you could play it in concerts. And Charles Averson, who was the organist of St. Nicholas Church in Newcastle-on-Tyne, up in the north, arranged music by Geminiani, as did Geminiani arranged music by Corelli, so that it could be performed in public concerts. And so this is a string version of two Domenico Scarlatti sonatas with slow movements put in by Averson himself to turn it into a concerto grosso. And he wrote 12 of these.
And Telemann on the program.
Yeah, we have a piece and a half. The half, I'm just going to give a little hint to the listeners, is not on the program. So if you clap a lot, you get something extra. So I hope that's a good hint so that you can hear this other piece. It's a suite in F by Telemann for horns. Horns are... Well, let me just put this. The orchestra as an entity was formed from various constituencies. Strings, the string instruments come from the dance music tradition. Certain instruments, particularly, well, the trumpets and drums come from the military. The oboes also come from the military. They're actually, oboes in Louis XIV's time are listed as weapons of war. They're like bagpipes. They're designed to scare the enemy when you have a lot of them together. Horns come from the hunting field. And so they're one of the members of the orchestra who've been, as it were, domesticated to be allowed indoors. Because hand horns, the old horns used for hunting, are pretty feral. And so they've had their shoes wiped so they can come inside. But there's still a little sort of whiff of the country in what they play. And so this particular suite by Telemann is quite bucolic. It has some hunting music in it. Mm-hmm. It's loud, it's fast, and it's just very, very jolly.
Well, they always liked an alla rustica sort of style.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so it's a nice piece, and I can confess that I'm using the orchestra very slightly as a guinea pig because I've never done this piece before, and I wanted to do it. And so what we did is to get the manuscript, and actually a very clever person who lives in Minnesota and therefore wants to stay indoors a lot, actually put it on computer because it's not published. Mm-hmm. And then I've edited it for modern orchestra, and this will be the first time I've ever done it. So I'm really looking forward to it. To see, I know what it sounds like, so we may actually, this afternoon when we try it, we may find some computer errors, who knows. Mm-hmm. But we can always go online and look at the manuscript and see what's there.
Nicholas McGeegan leads the Illinois Chamber Orchestra in a program of 18th century music this evening at 7:30 at St. Agnes Church in Springfield. I'm Carl Scroggin.